The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Lots to get to on today's big show. We've got another big announcement from the Trump administration. We'll come to that here in just a bit. Also, we'll discuss Devin Nunes's war against the deep state. He keeps making headlines, at least if you read some of the conservative commentary, the conservative news outlets. He's virtually ignored in the mainstream. You think about if Adam Schiff was bringing 8 criminal referrals to the Justice Department, how many headlines would that get? Well, this is what Nunes is doing, and of course he's doing some other things as well. Also, a couple of stories on the number of viewers for this series, The Game of Thrones. I guess it's supposed to be in its last season, but they're projecting 1 billion people watching this show, which if you've read anything about it, it just, some of the most despicable kinds of things. It puts it right on display for everyone to see and to think about. What is it, 1/7 of the world watching this program, this series? We'll save that more toward the end. And also point out a few things that Herbert Armstrong had to say about entertainment and television watching that we've used before, actually, on this program. Well, today is the day that the Israelis go to the polls to elect, and from everything that we're seeing in this part of the world, the election is going to be a tight one. Benjamin Netanyahu going up against this military man. His name escapes me offhand, but it's interesting, some of the coverage that that the election is getting. CBS actually sent one of its reporters over to Israel, and the angle for the story, of course, was how that Donald Trump was unfairly helping Benjamin Netanyahu. And so here's this CBS reporter following around the candidates, following the opponent of Netanyahu, and asking him if it's fair, the support that Netanyahu's getting from Donald Trump. These are organizations that don't care one bit about, well, if you think about when the story broke, I think it was in 2016. When we learned that Barack Obama actually used $350,000 taxpayer funds, U.S. taxpayers, the former president used that to mobilize efforts against Prime Minister Netanyahu. And CBS and the others, they didn't care one bit. That story broke when we were hearing all about Russia's meddling. And here was Barack Obama meddling in Israel's elections. And now, because of some of Donald Trump's policies, well, CBS and others, they're absolutely sure that this is some kind of, if not illegal, unethical meddling in Israel's election. They want so bad for Netanyahu to go down. We'll see what happens later today or tomorrow. The New York Times, the international edition of the New York Times, just yesterday there was a front page opinion piece under the title, In Israel, a So-Called Democracy. That's the New York Times. Israel is a so-called democracy. Well, they say they're a democracy, but really they aren't. It's the same kind of spirit behind the... Well, he got in, but he didn't get the popular vote. It was that old, archaic electoral college. That's what got him in. And it's not really a democracy. So they say the same thing now about Israel. We'll have more, as I say, to get into on this. on tomorrow's broadcast. Well, meanwhile, as Israel goes to the polls, you have the Trump agenda that continues to go forward. The administration making another big announcement yesterday.
He did it again.
Yeah, there's Netanyahu. We played that from a few weeks ago, following the U.S. recognizing the Golan Heights, Israeli sovereignty over the Golan Heights. And then yesterday, here comes the Trump administration announcing that it was going to declare the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps a terrorist organization. An FTO, as they call it, a foreign terrorist organization. This was Secretary of State Mike Pompeo in his official statement for the State Department yesterday, clip one.
Today, the United States is continuing to build its maximum pressure campaign against the Iranian regime. I am announcing our intent to designate the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, including its Quds Force, as a foreign terrorist organization, in accordance with Section 219 of the Immigration and Nationality Act. This designation will take effect 1 week from today. This is the first time that the United States has designated a part of another government as an FTO. We're doing it because the Iranian regime's use of terrorism as a tool of statecraft makes it fundamentally different from any other government.
Pretty amazing, as he said there, Secretary Pompeo, the first time the United States has designated a part of another government as an FTL.
He did it again.
That's right. They did it again. You'll remember when Mr. Trump talked about moving the embassy over to Jerusalem. He talked about all of the pundits saying that the sky would fall, that everything would break down, it would lead to World War III. And they move it. They did it cheaply, as he says. And life goes on. But here is the administration doing something for the first time, designating a part of another government. It's not the United States just saying that this state sponsors terror. It's now labeling the IRGC, the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, as a foreign terrorist organization. So he does it again. He pulls out of the... This is a long step forward or beyond pulling out of the JCPOA. First, he does that. As I say, he moves the Israeli embassy, or rather the U.S. embassy, to Jerusalem. He recognizes the Golan Heights. And then now he declares the IRGC a terrorist organization. Mr. Pompeo went on to say this, clip two.
This historic step will deprive the world's leading state sponsor of terror the financial means to spread misery and death around the world.
It's going to deprive, as he said there, this leading state sponsor of terror the means that it needs to spread its misery, to spread terrorism. The New York Times coverage of this announcement this morning, declaring the IRGC a foreign terrorist organization, as it says. It writes that the designation imposes wide-ranging economic and travel sanctions on the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, as well as organizations, companies, and individuals with ties to it. The IRGC carry out operations across the Middle East. They train Arab Shiite militias and oversee businesses in Iran. It says Monday's designation, this quotes President Trump, will significantly expand the scope and scale of our maximum pressure on the Iranian regime. And then listen to the Times, and you get an indication of where they stand on this. The designation was opposed by some top Trump administration national security officials who said it could incite retaliation by Tehran against American troops and intelligence officers. It takes effect April 15th, but was announced Monday in what American officials described as a chaotic and rushed process. That's according to American officials, more anonymous sourcing. And, of course, the administration is made to look like it's just making these decisions on a whim. And it's the product or the outgrowth of this chaotic scene in the White House. It was rush, rush, rush. Let's get it out. Let's get it announced as quick as we can. And yet you listen to the 11-minute statement from Secretary Pompeo. It certainly doesn't seem like it's rushed or hasty or chaotic by any means. Listen to him as he explains, again, some of the reality. And later on, we'll get into some of the history of this IRGC, clip 3.
This designation is a direct response to an outlaw regime and should surprise no one. And it builds on the more than 970 Iranian individuals and entities that the Trump administration has already sanctioned.
That's the Secretary of State saying this should be surprising to no one. In fact, it's surprising and upsetting to just about everybody. European commentators and politicians, certainly all of the president's opponents in the United States. As I say, when you listen to the statement, it hardly sounds chaotic and rushed. Here's the Secretary of State giving some important history for us to keep in mind. Clip 4.
For 40 years, the Islamic Republic's Revolutionary Guard Corps has actively engaged in terrorism and created, supported, and directed other terrorist groups. The IRGC masquerades as a legitimate military organization, but none of us should be fooled. It regularly violates the laws of armed conflict. It plans, organizes, and executes terror campaigns all around the world. From the moment it was founded, the IRGC's mandate was to defend and export the regime's revolution by whatever means possible. The IRGC institutionalized terrorism shortly after its inception, directing horrific attacks against the Marine Barracks in Beirut in 1983 and the U.S. Embassy Annex in 1984, alongside the terror group it midwifed, Lebanese Hezbollah. Its operatives have worked to destabilize the Middle East from Iraq to Lebanon to Syria and to Yemen. With this designation, the Trump administration is simply recognizing a basic reality. The IRGC will take its rightful place on the same list as terror groups it supports: Lebanese Hezbollah, Palestinian Islamic Jihad, Hamas, Khatib Hezbollah, among others, all of which are already designated as foreign terrorist organizations.
So until this point, it really was just kind of backwards. You had all of these offshoots that were recognized as terrorist organizations, and then the sponsor behind them all, the creator of them all, was somehow left off the list. No United States president had the courage to label the IRGC as a terrorist organization. I love the statement about simply recognizing a basic reality. It's just reality. It's a basic reality. Look at the history. Look at what's happened since the start of the Islamic Revolution. Look at what happened to our own troops in 1983. Look at what, in case you forget that, if that's too long ago, look at what happened to our own troops during the surge. Hundreds and hundreds of American troops. Iran has blood on its hands. This is a basic reality. It shouldn't surprise anyone. And yet for years, Americans were used to hearing about, well, look at how then Secretary of State, John Kerry, he was going gallivanting the world arm in arm with his Iranian counterpart. Best of friends. And here this JCPOA, it was supposed to prevent Iran from getting nuclear weapons. And, of course, the big flaw, one of many, of that so-called deal in 2016 was that it didn't address Iran's support for terrorism. Its funding of terrorism, its sponsorship of terror. And so the U.S. just had to continually turn a blind eye to all of these terrorist atrocities, to even the murder of U.S. troops. We're simply recognizing a basic reality. It really does underscore the two schools of thought in international diplomacy, foreign relations, geopolitics. You have the fantasists on one side, like those from the previous administration, just living in a fantasy, thinking that anyone you sit down with and talk to, you're going to be able to, even if they're the most hardened terrorists, even if they vow every single week to wipe you off the map, you can somehow sit down with them and talk sense into them. Pure fantasy. And then you have the realists that say, well, look at the history. This is a basic reality. This shouldn't be shocking or surprising at all. Some of you might remember when Russia annexed Crimea. There were a lot of world leaders, including President Obama and Secretary of State Kerry then at the time, that were up in arms. They couldn't believe it. It was quite shocking to them. Why would Russia do this? Secretary Kerry at the time, he said, you just don't, in the 21st century, you don't behave in a 19th century fashion by invading another country on completely trumped up pretext. That was America's strong rebuke for Putin. We just let him, in other words, we just let him waltz right in there and take over. We abandoned Ukraine before that. We opened the way for this invasion, this 19th century style invasion, to use the language Secretary Kerry used. It was a revealing comment. It was John Kerry out there saying, look, this is so 19th century. We're not supposed to behave like this. This is the 21st century. He thinks we're just getting better and better. He doesn't understand human nature. He thinks we're so far beyond what happened in the 19th century. If only he knew. Well, it's going to be a wake-up call for both sides, whether you're a realist or a fantasist. When you think about what's coming, Jesus prophesied of great tribulation. But at least you have an administration that is simply recognizing a basic reality, and it's refreshing. Because that's not recognized in Europe. It's not recognized in most of the United States. Israel recognizes it, at least under the leadership of Netanyahu. Eli Lake at Bloomberg, he says, finally, a U.S. president is willing to ratchet up the pressure on Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps.
He did it again.
Yes, that's right. He did it again. The Trump administration does it again. Finally, there's a U.S. president, says over at Bloomberg, who's willing to put pressure on the source of the terrorism, the sponsor of the terror. Here you have Soleimani. He's all over the place. He's traveling into Iraq. He's in Syria. He's in Lebanon. He's wherever he needs to go. Free reign. Well, he's going to have to watch his back a little more closely now. He's leading a terrorist organization. So says the United States. Eli Lake says, for more than 30 years, successive U.S. administrations have called Iran what it is, a state sponsor of terrorism. Leaders of its military and intelligence agencies have been sanctioned, while the terror groups Iran supports have faced military action as well as sanctions. Until now, however, the main organization responsible for founding, funding, and training many of these groups has not been placed in the same category as its clients like Hezbollah. On Monday, President Donald Trump upended that precedent and designated Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, known as the IRGC, as a foreign terrorist organization. Here's Donald Trump once again upending the precedent. He did it again. This is a dramatic escalation with real consequences, it says. There is a difference between saying a state is a sponsor of terrorism and calling an arm of a state an actual terrorist organization. This should have been done decades ago. This should have been done in the last administration. Lake says the designation also makes any non-Iranians who wittingly or unwittingly do business with the IRGC vulnerable to having their U.S. visas revoked. This is an even more powerful disincentive for Europeans to invest in Iran. It quotes this this expert just talking about how the IRGC's tentacles they reach into most aspects of Iran's economy. So businesses, businesses far and wide are going to have to be careful. Listen to how he concludes this piece. It says, this is a point that the narrow nuclear agreement, by dealing only with Iran's nuclear program and not its support for terrorism, tried to evade. Remember, Ben Rhodes and them, they had to create this narrative saying that everything was going to make it was all going to make the world safer. This JCPOA, they created this false narrative. They lied and they lied and they lied. And then they didn't even address this point. It's support for terrorism. Talk about intent. Talk about exposing bad faith. Didn't even address it. Lake says now the U.S. government has formally recognized that a key part of Iran's military is legally indistinguishable from the terrorist groups it has been sponsoring for decades. Trump's strategy, unlike his predecessors, begins with the premise that Iran is an outlaw state and treats it as such until it changes its behavior. That's refreshing, as I say. It's refreshing. It's recognizing a basic reality. This is an outlaw state. That's the premise. Now, listen to Secretary Pompeo as he, again, covers more important history. Clip 5.
Last September, a federal court in the United States found Iran and the IRGC responsible for the 1996 Khobar Towers bombing, which killed 19 American service members. In 2011, the United States foiled an IRGC coup d'etat plus right here in Washington, D.C. to bomb a restaurant. The attempt was to kill the Saudi ambassador to the United States of America.
These things were happening, just a year ago. A federal court found that the IRGC was responsible for the 96 Khobar Towers bombing. And then a few years ago, the plot to try to kill that Saudi ambassador in Washington, D.C. Washington, D.C., of all places. And then what about all the troops? Well, yesterday, Mr. Pompeo said it was at least 603. I think for a number of years, we've assumed it was about 500 of our troops that were murdered by Iranian militias, or Iranian-made IEDs. 500. He came out yesterday and said it's actually 603. Clip 6.
The blood of the 603 American soldiers the Iranian regime is found to have killed in Iraq is on his hands and on the hands of the IRGC more broadly. Inexplicably, the regime has faced no accountability from the international community for those deaths. Far from being an arbitrary attack on Iran, our pressure campaign imposes just and long overdue consequences for the regime's malign activity.
It's long overdue, he says. This is facing a basic reality. Soleimani has blood on his hands. 603 American soldiers. And how do you explain that? A regime that's faced no accountability for it. One final statement here from the Secretary of State's comments yesterday, clip 7.
And on a final note, the IRGC is also responsible for wrongly detaining U.S. persons, several of whom remain in captivity in Iran. The American people should know that we are working diligently to bring each of those individuals home. With this designation, we are sending a clear signal, a clear message to Iran's leaders including Qasem Soleimani and his band of thugs, that the United States is bringing all pressure to bear to stop the regime's outlaw behavior. We ask that our allies and partners around the world do the same.
So that's Secretary of State Mike Pompeo's comments yesterday about this latest big announcement coming from the Trump administration, this time labeling the IRGC a terrorist organization. This is, what would you say, a resurgence for the United States of America? It's only temporary. Sadly, it's only temporary. Soon, the rest of the world is going to wake up to this basic reality. Soon, the rest of the world. Soon, Europe. You think about Daniel 11 and verse 40. That's when that happens, when that plays out, Europe is going to wake up to and recognize a basic reality. That this is a terrorist state. It's an outlaw state. And it's going to lead to a spectacular clash. So we want to keep a prophetic perspective here as we witness these incredible events. There's all kinds of other stories talking about Iran stretching its influence through Iraq and Syria all the way through to the Mediterranean. We had a story last week from the Asia Times talking about these Syrian ports or gaining control of a port in Syria, which will give it that wide-ranging influence. It says, for Tehran, which is suffering under crippling U.S. sanctions, a long-sought Mediterranean foothold is a potential game-changer. And it quotes this Oklahoma University, Joshua Landis. He says, Iran dreams of building a strong regional economy based on trade highways and pipelines that cross from Iran to the Mediterranean. Helping to build up Syrian ports is only one element in a much larger vision of prosperity and shared interests. It says, a foothold in Latakia fulfills a decades-long Iranian dream of having direct access to the Mediterranean Sea. So here is this push to the Mediterranean. And if you look into North Africa, there's lots of instability there right now. So even though Iran's taking some hits coming from the United States, it is prophesied in that same chapter, Daniel 11, for Iran to gain control of Libya and even Egypt, Ethiopia. We've written about this before. My father wrote, this is from a few years ago, he just said, I'll just paraphrase, but he said, if you want to know why the radical Islamic movement is so interested in Libya and Ethiopia and those nations next to it, if you look at Ethiopia in Bible prophecy, it's even bigger than what it would be on a modern map. But just look at a map, and you see where these nations are situated. Now, on the other hand, there's prophecies that show us that Syria will not be in that radical Islamist camp. The Psalm 83 alliance, those nations in the Middle East that align with Germany, with Assyria, and the Holy Roman Empire, and those opposed to that King of the North. So that's the prophetic perspective that we want to keep in mind. Right now, you certainly see a very different foreign policy coming from the Trump administration. You definitely see a temporary resurgence, an administration that really is exposing the Islamic State for what it is, for what it has been from the beginning. And soon, as I say, Europe will awaken to that reality as well. When we come back, we'll look into this ongoing war, Devin Nunes, his war against the deep state. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
Herbert W. Armstrong long forecast the arrival of a military superpower in Europe. In a world where European nations can't rely on the United States, one in which they fear Russia and face the constant threat of radical terror, their only hope of survival is to band together. This is what we see happening, and what we see happening was prophesied in your Bible. Request Germany and the Holy Roman Empire to learn about the history of Germany and the Holy Roman Empire and to understand where the events in Europe today are leading. 3,000 years ago, the prophet Daniel explained that at the time of the end, radical Islam would push against Europe. That time is now. We are witnessing the first manifestations of this Islamist push against Europe. And it's leading to a spectacular clash between these two prophesied kings, the King of the North and the King of the South. What does the Bible say about the identity of these two kings? What about the end time? Will everyone be affected by these events? Request our two booklets, The King of the South and Germany and the Holy Roman Empire. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com. From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Flurry.
It was 1 year ago this month when we ran with that article in the Trumpet magazine, our monthly news print production. The Nunes Memo Exposes Unseen Threat to America. This was an article by my father. And he talked in the opening of that article about how that this memo, I think the memo came out actually in February of 2018, but that the memo, the Nunes Memo, it's named after Devin Nunes, it exposes all of the corruption inside the FBI, inside the DOJ. My father said America's law enforcement agencies have been compromised and politicized. He said the radical left Democrats fought against the memo being released. They fought against it. They didn't want this to see the light of day. You see how the game is played. Now, Mueller, there's a cover-up. We've got to have everything. We've got to have all 400 pages. But in the case of a memo that's devastating in the way that it exposes this fraudulent hoax. Well, we've got to keep that under wraps. It's a security issue, don't you know? They never wanted it to see the light of day. And did you know the media? The major media didn't want to see it either. They didn't want you to see it. The Nunes memo. They didn't want the truth to go out. Now, when it takes down a politician they hate, like in the case of Nixon, well, sure, you've got to get those Pentagon Papers out there, even if they're confidential, even if it's illegal. We've got to publish it. Oh, yes. So here is Devin Nunes. He's fighting a lonely battle. He's got some support in the House, not nearly enough. But you can thank this man more than just probably any other in the House of Representatives for exposing the collusion hoax. So many things that the Democrats and the New York Times never, ever, ever wanted you to see or know. And now we know it, thanks to him and some of his efforts, thanks to his memo. When you think about what he wrote in that memo, when the Attorney General came out with his summary a couple weeks ago following the release of the Mueller report, Devin Nunes is the one who should have been taking a victory lap. He told us all of this more than a year ago. But remember how much abuse he took for it? They tried to ruin him. They've tried to dig up any and every possible scandal on him. They tried to destroy him during the midterm elections. He's had to recuse himself for this accusation or that. Well, here he is. He's going forward this week with these eight criminal referrals he's explaining some of this on Fox News over the weekend. Here's clip 8.
Five of them are what I would call straight up referrals. So just referrals that are that name someone and name the specific crimes. Those crimes are lying to Congress, misleading Congress, leaking classified information. So five of them are those types. There are three that I think are more complicated. So you mentioned conspiracy. So the question on conspiracy is what, you know, there's the conspiracy statute, and then what do they need to look at under that statute? So on the first one is FISA abuse and other matters. We believe there was a conspiracy to lie to the FISA court, mislead the FISA court by numerous individuals that all need to be investigated and looked at. And we believe the statute is the conspiracy statute. The second conspiracy one is involving manipulation of intelligence.
And he goes on to a third, and just a bit after that comment, he wants it to be fair at the DOJ and the FBI. If you're going to take down Flynn for what might have been a lie, or Roger Stone or Manafort, all these people they didn't care about, they didn't care about their tax returns or their statements before Congress unless they're connected to Donald Trump. And so here comes Devin Nunes and says, look, there's quite a few. There's a lot of people in the deep state who've lied to Congress, who abused the FISA courts, who deceived the FISA courts, who manipulated intelligence, who lied repeatedly. They've destroyed people. I don't know how much mileage he's going to get out of his lawsuit against Twitter, of all places. Devin Nunes, I mean. And then I think he started another suit the other day against McClatchy. So he's got two big lawsuits he's triggered, and now these 8 criminal referrals. Just think about this, as I say. If you had one from the Democratic committee, Schiff or someone else, Nadler coming forward and saying, yeah, we've been investigating for 2 years. We've got all of this evidence. And here are the criminal referrals. We're going to submit it to the attorney general and let him deal with it. As it was, those individuals were just lying all along. Schiff in particular said, I've seen the evidence. I've seen the evidence of collusion and conspiracy. It's all there. In fact, he still says it. It doesn't matter what Mueller concludes. It doesn't matter what the attorney general concludes. He knows. He knows. Because they're all operating from the premise that Donald Trump is evil and corrupt through and through. So it doesn't matter what the evidence says or doesn't say. Here comes Devin Nunes, though, with quite a lot of evidence. It'll be interesting to see what the Attorney General, William Barr, what he does with this. There was a story at Epoch Times that Sam and I just went through today. Fascinating. It's like reading America Under Attack, and great again. In some ways, it is. You want to look at real collusion, a real conspiracy. It says several U.S. presidents have genuinely colluded with Russia. Several U.S. presidents have genuinely done that, or the former Soviet Union, it says, but none more so than the 44th president of the United States, Barack Obama. It's no exaggeration to say that Obama owes his entire career to Russian collusion. It's not an exaggeration. If you want a collusion story, and there's many in the media that still won't let it go with Donald Trump, but look at some of the things that just a few people were pointing out in 2008. I can remember maybe Sean Hannity as one of them. But who else picked up on it? Oh, they just made him seem like he's this great conspiracy theorist. But look at all of the associations. Look at his connections to Frank Marshall Davis. His mentor, Davis, joined the Communist Party back in the 1940s. He was a communist. These are the connections. These are the associations. And then look at the presidency itself. As I said earlier, they just waltz right into Crimea. Putin says, "Hey, get rid of those missiles in Europe." And Obama says, "All right, yes, whatever you want." Then he waltzes into Crimea and the United States. The only thing the U.S. can say is that, well, now that's kind of 19th century. You shouldn't do that. But the U.S. did nothing. So who's colluding here? Where is there real collusion? And then who can forget the remark in 2012? When you had Medvedev in there and Obama leaning forward, this was before his reelection campaign was finished, leaning forward and assuring Medvedev that he'd have more flexibility.
This is my last election. Yeah. After my election, I have more flexibility. Yeah.
I understand. I transmit this information to Vladimir and Medvedev.
This was about removing missiles in Europe aimed at Russia. He couldn't do much with that because, well, you don't want to just abandon Ukraine. You don't want anything controversial coming up to your reelection. So he leans forward. He thinks the mic is off. He tells Medvedev that, hey, after the election, I'll have more flexibility and I can accommodate your wishes. And Medvedev says, I understand. I'll transmit this to Vladimir and I stand with you. I stand with you, Barack Obama. We're with you. We're together with you. Can you believe it? This article at Epoch Times, it says, Obama has surrounded himself with pro-Moscow friends all his life. Why should he desert his friends just because he was president of the United States of America? Just after, listen to this. This is a bit of recent history. Just after Obama's election to the presidency on November 15th, 2008, Sam Webb, then chairman of the still pro-Moscow Communist Party USA, told his party comrades, quote, the left can and should advance its own views and disagree with the Obama administration without being disagreeable. Its tone should be respectful. We're speaking to a friend. We're speaking to a friend, said the chairman of the Communist Party USA once Obama won. Be careful, you guys, how that you talk about him, how that you speak about Barack Obama. He's with us. He's a friend. He's an ally. Yeah, that's what he said in 2008. One of the points this guy makes at Epoch Times is, can you imagine what the press, what the DOJ, what Congress could turn up if they had 2 years to investigate Barack Obama and all of his connections to Russia? If they went at it with the same venomous force that they've gone after Donald Trump, can you imagine what they would turn up? A lot of it's right there in plain view for you and I to see. We can see it. Frank Marshall Davis, Alice Palmer, Obama supported her when she was an Illinois state senator. He was Palmer's chief of staff. And then after she unsuccessfully ran for Congress in 94, he took over her seat in 96. And this article says that Palmer was a pro-Soviet propagandist. It says in 1983, Palmer traveled to Czechoslovakia to the Soviet-controlled World Peace Council's Prague Assembly. At the time, she served on the executive board of the Communist Party USA dominated USA-dominated U.S. Peace Council. So here she has these connections with the Communist Party USA, traveling to Czechoslovakia. David Axelrod. He's been a longtime friend of the Obama family. Says in the 1940s, Axelrod's mother wrote for the left-leaning New York Magazine. It says, though not officially a communist publication, several Communist Party USA members worked on the paper. While studying in Chicago, the article says, Axelrod was mentored by longtime Chicago journalist and activist David Cantor. David Cantor joined the Communist Party USA and would later become an associate of Obama. These are members of the, or former members, or members that are closely tied to the Communist Party USA. Valerie Jarrett, Jarrett's father, James Bowman, was also accused of associating with Stern. It says FBI files also reveal Bowman was also a member of a communist sympathizing group called the Association of Internes and Medical Students. And then you have John Brennan. That was Obama's man at the CIA. He was in the Communist Party in the 1970s. Somehow he passed through security clearance. And Obama, too. This article at Epoch Times, it says, despite a lifetime of radical associations, Obama never had to undergo any form of security background check to serve in the Illinois State Senate, U.S. Senate, or the White House. It's highly unlikely he could have passed a security check to drive a school bus, let alone serve as leader of the free world. Imagine what a two-year, multi-million-dollar, taxpayer-funded investigation into Obama's Russian ties might uncover. Yes, imagine. You have to imagine it, because it'll never happen. But imagine. It says, finally, if President Obama was a fully recruited agent of Moscow, tasked with giving Russia a significant military advantage over the United States and economically weakening and socially dividing the nation, how would he have conducted his presidency or his post-presidency any differently? If he was operating to help boost, to help support, to help further the cause of Russia, how could he have done anything differently than what he actually did? Look at Europe's missile defense, Ukraine. Look at Crimea. Look at that statement in 2012. Look at Hillary Clinton with the reset button. And on and on and on it goes. It falls right in line with what we've said, as I said at the top. In America Under Attack, he was right. The communist infiltration. My father talked on this in 2014. He quoted from that 1956 quote that we've used so often from Herbert Armstrong. This was his TV show, America Under Attack, from 2014, clip 10.
I want to read you something that Herbert W. Armstrong wrote way back in 1956, which is not exactly what I'm talking about, but it gives you an insight into the kind of warfare that's going on against America. Notice what Mr. Armstrong wrote in 1956, and I'll just quote it to you. A psychological warfare of propaganda, infiltration, subversion, demoralization that is coming upon America, he said. That is the goal of the communists. At least he certainly believed that at the time, and so do I. But they were inflicting that kind of warfare. He continues by saying, it is a warfare that has attacked our minds and moral and spiritual values rather than our bodies and our earthly possessions. He said it's a kind of warfare we don't understand or know how to cope with. It uses every diabolical means to weaken us from within, sapping our strength, perverting our morals, sabotaging our educational system, wrecking our social structure, destroying our spiritual and religious life, weakening our industrial and economic power, demoralizing our armed forces, and finally, after such infiltration, overthrowing our government by force and violence.
That's from my father's program in 2014, quoting from a statement Herbert Armstrong made in 1956. And as my father brings out in America Under Attack, he doesn't claim to know the degree to which the communists organized all of this with Obama and his many associations. But he does know about the devil. He does know. My father does know about what your Bible says regarding Satan the devil. And he's doing everything that he can do to destroy the United States. And he uses the man at the very top if he can. He wants to bring down the United States of America. My father wrote, and I'm watching as this government takes one step. He's referring to the Obama administration back in 2013-14. I'm watching as this government takes one step after another that is weakening this country and hastening the fulfillment of some of the most terrifying prophecies in the Bible. Here's the collusion story. Here's the real conspiracy. And it continues. When we come back, we'll have some closing remarks on that final series for the Game of Thrones, and also a quote or two either from Herbert Armstrong, if we have time, or from Orison Swett Marden. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Are we living in the last days? Some dismiss the notion as fanatical, but world leaders and news analysts are issuing warnings that are becoming more and more dire. Could Bible prophecies about the last days actually be accurate? Our brochure can help guide you through the relevant news and history and help you compare these events to what the Bible says. Are we living in the last days? This brochure is available for free right now at thetrumpet.com. From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Flurry.
So, a billion people watching the Game of Thrones. That's what's projected. 1 billion people. This program that, as I understand it, the season, here it had a violent rape. They're putting that out there on television for a billion people to see. I don't know if that's in this next season, but a violent rape? Think about what we're filling our minds with. A billion viewers in 170 different countries, 170 nations. And just trying to figure out, as I was asking the crew this morning, I know there's the violence and the sex and the rape and all those things, but what in the world about this story is so appealing? A lot of fantasy, and as one Forbes article brings out, there's really no good or bad. There's no right and wrong. It says the viewer is subjected to a moral whiplash that does not, I fear, so much build a sense of character complexity or even the vicarious pleasure of occasional moments of unrestrained impulse as it builds an inadvertent case for abandoning moral distinctions per se. That's your favorite character? Well, he could just be vile and evil as well. There's no right and wrong. There's no real moral distinctions. And people love it. Does this help us, you think? Does this help us when we look at the real world? This is fantasy. But then when we look at the real world, just to try to get an understanding of a basic reality. Look, this is basic. We're just recognizing something that's basic. It shouldn't be shocking at all. Why is it so shocking, though, for so many millions and billions of people? Well, in part because we're filling our minds with this kind of filth. God said in the last days, we'd be lovers of pleasures more than lovers of God. Mr. Armstrong, in a coworker letter that he wrote back in 1955, he talked about people that were letting entertainment and television get in the way of their progress spiritually. It was stealing time away from their Bible study and their prayer. As he said in that letter, there were people telling ministers that they didn't have time for Christ and the gospel anymore. They didn't have time to study the literature, the truth of God anymore. He said in that letter that we need to press forward. We need to press forward spiritually and fill our lives on the truth of God. He said in another piece, this is from 1981, the world lives on the get motive. The world wants idleness, ease, and entertainment. The commercial and industrial interests who sponsor and pay for television, the programming and broadcasting want the largest mass audience for their money. Well, they're getting a mass audience for this show. They're tailored to what the public wants. The public wants this. The public craves this. The public desires this. It's not just in the U.S. It's 170 nations. It does take a lot to pull away from this and to hunger and thirst for God's righteousness. To hunger and thirst. Read through Matthew 5 as you get ready for Passover and the days of unleavened bread. Hunger for God's truth. Feed on God's truth every day. Pull away from this world and all of its forms of entertainment. And fill up on the truth of God. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to submit feedback, you can email us at td@kpcg.fm, or you can send us a voicemail at the TDRS page on the website. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you tomorrow.